නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ ඒකායනෝ අයං භික්කවේ මග්ගෝ සත්තානං විසුද්ධියා ශෝක පරිද්ධවානං සමතික්කමාය දුක්ඛ දෝමනස්සානං අත්ථගමාය ඥායස්ස අධිගමාය නිබ්බානස්ස සච්චිකිරියාය යදිදං චත්තාරෝ සතිපට්ඨානාති. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing various suttas which are more relevant to our practice, and nowadays we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta. Satipatthana Sutta is quite relevant to our practice, and it is widely used among many people who are interested in the Buddha's teaching, and especially on the practice. Now, when it comes to Satipatthana Sutta, it is available in Majjhima Nikaya as well as in the Digha Nikaya, and Majjhima Nikaya one is fairly comprehensive, and the essential details are there. Similarly, Digha Nikaya Satipatthana Sutta also quite comprehensive, and more details are there in the Four Noble Truths when compared with the Majjhima Nikaya Satipatthana Sutta. Basically, this is not the only places available. There are several suttas. There are so many suttas collected together and put it in the Samyutta Nikaya. It is called Satipatthana Samyutta, which are all dealing with Satipatthana. We can say Satipatthana as the first stage, that is the mindfulness establishment of mindfulness. And the Satipatthana Sutta, if one closely analyze, one can recognize the second part, that is the Satipatthana Bhavana, the meditating part, the development of the wisdom part is also there. Then thirdly, the path, the practice, as a complete path, as a complete way of life, is also introduced towards the latter part of the sutta. And actually the sutta has four components, and each component, Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, has several, we can say as kammatthana, several meditation instructions, meditation tools, meditation methods, and each method has all these three stages: the establishment of mindfulness, and then the development of the wisdom, and then a way of developing wisdom. So it is very concisely mentioned, the third part, the way of developing wisdom, as a complete path, as a complete practice. So nowadays we are discussing Dhammanupassana. We already discussed Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana, and if anyone wants to know the previous teachings, probably you can refer our website. So all are uploaded, and you can refer there. Kayanupassana is fairly discussed in detail, and then we went to Vedanupassana, and then we went to Chittanupassana, and now we are dealing in the Dhammanupassana. As you can see, Dhammanupassana also consists of five components, five steps we can say. One, first component dealing with the hindrances, nivarana. Second component dealing with aggregates, khanda. Third component dealing with ayatana, those are the sense bases. And fourth, dealing with awakening factors, bodhyanga. And last, dealing with the Four Noble Truths, satcha. Now, if we recall about the teachings on the nivarana, there Buddha asked us to recognize various nivarana, various hindrances. You know, our minds sometimes go through lust, go through anger, go through sloth and torpor, go through restlessness, and sometimes regrets, and sometimes doubts. So these are typically recognized as five main hindrances, which is blocking us, avoiding us attaining Nibbana. So therefore, first of all, recognizing these hindrances is quite important. So therefore, in the Dhammanupassana section, Buddha asks us to recognize them. Now, once it comes to Dhammanupassana and even to the Chittanupassana section, it is expected to have some amount of mindfulness already developed, because now we are in a little delicate part where we are trying to observe the mind using the mind. So that is a bit tricky if one is not have enough practice taken from Kayanupassana or Vedanupassana, because Chittanupassana requires that sort of a understanding, that sort of a previous experience, how to look at mind by the mind. So we first look at various bodily phenomena by the mind and various feelings by the mind, and now we are observing various states, hindrances available happening in the mind by the mind. Now this is that is why it is a little tricky, but anyway, the practitioner who is gradually developing mindfulness, so he gains this capacity, he slowly recognize this ability in his mind. So once he has that ability, once he has recognized that skill, then it's not a big deal. He can actually start to look at or recognize various hindrances. So recognition of the presence of hindrance is one stage, and when the hindrance has passed, gone away or faded away, disappeared, so recognizing that free mind, which is free from hindrance, is also another stage. So we need to recognize both these stages. So when there is a hindrance, that also should be recognized, and when there is no hindrance, that also can be appreciated and can also be recognized. Now when one is dealing with the Dhammanupassana like that, so he further gains the ability to even know when any kind of a hindrance arising. Now at the earlier stages that would be difficult, because our minds are not that mindful. We don't have sharp mindfulness. We don't have very clear comprehension. So therefore it is little difficult to know when a defilement, a hindrance is arising. Once it has arisen and developed to some extent, then only we get a jerk, we get a trigger that okay, there is something going on in the mind. There is lust arising, roused in the mind. There is anger roused in the mind. So we get that indication. But as we further improve mindfulness, we get the capacity, we get the skill, even when the arising of the defilement can be seen. So that is the third stage that Buddha mentioned. In the Nivarana, when there is a hindrance arising, that also can be known. So knowing the hindrance is one important factor. Now here we are no more a victim of the hindrance. We are no more driven by the hindrance. Typically what happens is we are driven by the hindrance. We don't know about what's really going on. So we become a victim. We become driven by the hindrance. But the very moment that we are able to recognize there is a hindrance, there is lust, there is sloth and torpor, there is restlessness, etc. So that is kind of a disengagement from the hindrance. From that point onwards, actually we can further establish the mindfulness, and as a result, hindrance loses its power. Then it starts to fade away. So that also the practitioner can know. So once he properly disengaged from the hindrance, once he has well established mindfulness, so this hindrance starts to fade away. So that also he can know. And once it has completely gone away, disappeared, for some time it does not arise again. It will not arise again for some time. So that also the yogi can know. So this is the typical approach Buddha given when it comes to hindrances. Now we can move to Bodhjhanga. Those are the enlightenment factors, or sometimes called as awakening factors. And some similar structure is there, but here the difference is that we are not expecting to fade it away, rather we like to keep it. Because these are certain positive aspects has to be developed in the mind. Now hindrances and Bodhjhanga, enlightenment factors, awakening factors, are quite opposite. when there are hindrances, enlightenment factors cannot be present. And when there are awakening factors are present, then the hindrances can't exist. So therefore they are counterproductive. They are actually opposing to each other. So now when it comes to Bojjhanga, so we first of all has to know what is this term. So there is a beautiful sutta called Bhikkhu Sutta, Bodhaya Sutta, available in Bojjhanga Sanyutta. There one monk come and ask from the Buddha, Bojjhanga Bojjhangati Bhante Ucchati Kittavatanuko Bhante Bojjhangati Ucchanti. So Bojjhanga Bojjhanga is said, what exactly are these Bojjhanga? Why is it called Bojjhanga? So this is the question that he is asking. Then Buddha mentioned, Bodhaya Sangvattantiti Kho Bhikkhu Tasma Bojjhangati Ucchanti. Since it is causing the awakening, since it is causing the understanding, so that is why they are called Bojjhanga. So first of all, we need to clarify this point. So there are certain qualities that if they are present in the mind, so it basically increases the understanding. It improves the understanding. It improves the awakening feeling, awakening in the mind. So it enlightens the mind. So those are the positive qualities that we are talking as Bojjhanga. As sometimes translated as enlightenment factors and sometimes translated as awakening factors. So they are basically positive qualities, and those are essential for one to attain Nibbana. So without developing these awakening factors, no way possible to attain Nibbana. So therefore we can understand it is so crucial to develop these awakening factors in one's own mind. Now, how to develop Bojjhanga? So that is the other practical point now we come across. So there are many methods to develop enlightenment factors, awakening factors, particularly if we consider Satipatthana. So Satipatthana is one very beautiful and methodical way of developing enlightenment factors. So say for example in the Anapanasati Sutta, where Buddha mentioned the development of the enlightenment factors is possible by developing four foundations of mindfulness. So, and then he questioned. Now, Anapanasati Sutta available in Majjhima Nikaya, and there he explains, and how bhikkhus do the four foundations of mindfulness developed and cultivated fulfill the seven enlightenment factors. So he asked the question, Buddha asked the question, that how to develop these enlightenment factors through four foundations of mindfulness. Now this is quite important, because we as practitioners should know, while developing four foundations of mindfulness, how it is producing or how it is giving necessary conditions to develop enlightenment factors. So if we know this Buddha's teaching very well, we are clear about it, then we are confident, and then we are using the correct methodology. Otherwise we may be using it wrongly, then we may not be able to develop four awakening factors. So therefore Buddha's explanation about these awakening factors, how to develop awakening factors using four foundations of mindfulness, is quite important. Later we'll discuss what are other methods are available, but here when it comes to mindfulness, so this mindfulness practice itself can be used to develop seven enlightenment factors. Now there in Anapanasati Sutta, Buddha gives a fairly comprehensive detail of this development of enlightenment factors using four foundations. Let's take the first foundation, for example. Assume that one is developing Anapanasati. So he is trying to be mindful about breathing. When in-breath happens, he is mindful. When out-breath happens, he is mindful. So likewise, he is continuing. Now during that time, he can't maintain his attention. So the mind again goes to the past, taking certain memory. Again, sometimes shift to the future, taking some sort of future planning, daydreaming, etc. So it's at the beginning, it's very much like a struggle because mind continuously jumps. So at this level, Buddha says it is not the development of the enlightenment factors, because still the yogi is simply trying to establish mindfulness. He is not yet stable, his mind is not yet established. But since he is continuing his practice, one day he is able to maintain mindfulness continuously, at least for a certain period of time, say half an hour, say 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, continuously, he is able to establish mindfulness. Now in-breath happens, he is aware of that. When out-breath happens, he is aware of that. Again in-breath happens, he is aware of that. Again out-breath happens, he is aware of that. So likewise, now there is no struggle, rather the yogi is able to establish mindfulness successfully. And Buddha says this is the moment that the starting of the development of sati, mindfulness, enlightenment factor starts. Now there are 7 enlightenment factors, starting with mindfulness. Sati sambojjhanga, virya dhamma vichaya sambojjhanga, translated as investigation enlightenment factor, then virya sambojjhanga, that is the effort or energy enlightenment factor, then piti sambojjhanga, rapture enlightenment factor, passaddi sambojjhanga, that is the tranquility enlightenment factor, then samadhi sambojjhanga, that is the concentration or collectedness enlightenment factor, and last the upekkha sambojjhanga, that is the equanimity enlightenment factor. So these are the 7 enlightenment factors Buddha teaches, and it starts from mindfulness. Actually, the development of enlightenment factors has a gradual order. It is not from here and there they develop. Rather, first of all, one has to well establish in mindfulness, that actually leads to develop the next enlightenment factor. That leads to develop the other enlightenment factor. So likewise, it's a kind of a gradual process, step-by-step process. Now, as I mentioned, assume that one is developing anapanasati. We simply taking it as an example. So when he is able to continuously maintain his attention on breath without much distractions, so that is the moment that his mindfulness enlightenment factor has started to grow. Now he does not stop there, so he continues it. So next breath also he is establishing mindfulness. Next breath also he is establishing mindfulness. So likewise, he is continuing. Now this is the development. Once started, now gradually we are developing. And one day, because of his continuous practice, so this mindfulness enlightenment factor becomes fulfilled. So on whatever occasion unremitting mindfulness is established in a yogi, so that is the moment that the mindfulness enlightenment factor starts to develop. And he continues it so that the development is continuing, the progressing happens, and one day it comes to the fulfillment. Now this is the base. This is the mindfulness is, therefore we can say, the foundation. And Buddha does not stop us there. Now he invites us to investigate. So that is also important. Now assume when one establishes mindfulness on the breath, now we need to inquire what is really going on with the breath. What are the qualities? So we need to closely examine, investigate the breath. So this investigation is the one leading towards the investigation enlightenment factor, Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga. On whatever occasion abiding, when one is abiding with mindfulness, that yogi investigates, examines that whatever the phenomena with wisdom. He has a little curiosity. He is now examining the phenomena. As a result, he is able to know or reveal more subtle details of that phenomena. So this is how we are developing investigation enlightenment factor, Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga. Now, when he is doing it again and again, first breath he is doing, second breath he is doing, third breath he is doing, so likewise continuously he is doing. As a result, so this investigation enlightenment factor starts to develop. So we need to remember there is no inner chatter at this level. So the mind is completely calm, quiet, and his mind is well focused, and he is examining, he is investigating, he is closely analyzing, using a kind of a focused mind. Now this process requires a fair amount of energy as well, because you know these phenomena are not that attractive. Say for example, if you are watching a movie, so you don't need energy, rather the movie itself has a kind of a attraction. Our mind get bounded with it. So it is so, say, attractive. So it, there may be various lustful scenes, various attractive scenes, excitement, etc. So because of those sceneries, images, sounds, we being attracted towards that. So it is our defilements are in a very high level, and we being absorbed to it, we being trapped in it. We are a victim of that movie, we can say. But on the other hand, when it comes to these various phenomena arising in the present moment, they are not that attractive. Say breath is not an attractive phenomena. Rising and falling is not an attractive phenomena. Various element characteristics are not attractive phenomena. They are very natural and mostly equanimous phenomena. So if one has to sustain one's investigation, he has to put forth a lot of energy. He has to maintain a lot of effort if he want to continue it for a long time. Say if you want to do this observation, do this examination, do this investigation for 1 hour, during this 1 hour, you need to maintain effort, because if mind become lethargic, sort of disappointed, discouraged, again and again you have to encourage the mind, again and again you have to arouse energy. So this is how the effort enlightenment factor going to develop. So it's a kind of a practical scenario where you need to involve in this process, you are examining the process, and when mind says no, I am tired, or I am not interested on this, etc., so you have to energize it, you have to further encourage it to continue the practice. So this is how the effort enlightenment factor going to develop. So this tireless energy aroused in a person who is investigating these phenomena is the one going to develop this energy enlightenment factor, Virya Sambojjhanga. Now again and again when he is doing it, this Virya Sambojjhanga going to develop, and ultimately it become fulfilled. And we need to know actually, it does not mean that we are maintaining the enlightenment factors at the same level. So they also change. So the level of effort available at the beginning may vary once you are reaching the middle of your practice. And it may be even vary once you reach the end of the session. So during the sitting session, at the very earliest stages, you may have to have a lot of energy in order to maintain the attention. So once you start the investigation, still you may have to have some amount of energy. But when the situation happens properly, when the examination happens smoothly, then you can balance the energy. So likewise, these enlightenment factors have to be balanced. So that actually we'll discuss in the future how this balancing has to do. But for today, let's discuss the basics. And we can understand now this energy enlightenment factor is a kind of a continuous process we are using in order to maintain that application of the mind. Now, once you are doing it, assume that you are becoming successful. Now, everything happens smoothly. So your mind is now free from hindrances. So when a mind is free from hindrances, there's a kind of peacefulness. There's a kind of little happiness, pramoda, pamojja, kind of a delight is there in the mind, because now you are not tormented by defilements. Now you are doing a very delicate activity where some present moment phenomena are arising, and you are able to keep your attention again and again to those phenomena, and you are closely examining, and you are successful. So this is because of this, there's a little rupture going to arise in the mind. Because you know this is not an easy task, even though you have heard it. And once you are becoming successful, and it's a kind of a rupturous moment, because now you don't need to struggle, now you don't need to put a lot of energy. Rather, the practice itself has taken momentum, developed momentum, and now it is happening smoothly. Now, as a result, you get some amount of piti. So when this you have this piti, that is the starting of the development of piti enlightenment factor, that is called rupture enlightenment factor. Again and again it can happen. There's a little example I can give you. For example, in the Dhammapada, Buddha mentioned when one is looking at the arising and passing away of various phenomena, Buddha says that yogi is getting a kind of an unworldly kind of happiness. So therefore, only at the beginning we can say, okay, we have some sort of a dry type of investigation, but later, once you are succeeding, there could be a kind of energetic, quite pleasant, and even happy kind of an investigation. So when the mind is happy, when you are satisfied, when things are happening smoothly, so your body and your mind calms down. So it's a kind of interrelated. So your mind calms down, your body calms down, because there is no agitation, and as a result, this tranquility enlightenment factor is aroused. Now, mind becomes tranquil when it is rapturous. So, mind has its own happiness. So, therefore, it doesn't want to go outside, because internally he is happy. So, if there is happiness, why should the mind has to go out in search of happiness? Not necessary. So, now internal happiness is there. So, it likes to calm down while being inside. Say, for example, you are at home and all the necessary grocery items are available. Your fridge is full. You have all the things available. So then you don't need to go outside. Similarly, the mind, if everything happens smoothly and internally also fulfilled, satisfied, happy, then there is no need of going outside, no distractions. And therefore it's calm, therefore tranquil. So this is how this tranquility enlightenment factor is going to develop. Again and again this happens. Again and again tranquility enlightenment factor develops. And Buddha says when tranquility is there, so you feel kind of, sukha, comfortable. Now you are comfortable. There is no agitation. So you are quite satisfied. So bodily you feel comfortable. Mentally you feel comfortable. And because of that, so this, the comfortable environment, tranquil environment, leads to develop concentration. So you need to understand, so it is not that simple energy develops the concentration. Sometimes people try so hard to develop concentration. But our mind has to be tranquil, our mind has to be happy, pleasant. Then the necessary qualities are available to develop concentration. Yasmin samaye bhikkhuno passadda kayasya sukhino cittam samadhiyati. So Buddha mentioned, so when there is tranquility available, so then one experiences some comfort, and that comfortable atmosphere producing the concentration. So again and again this concentration happens. So mind is well concentrated, well focused, and this concentration is continuing now. it is not necessary to say this concentration is only on a single phenomena, on one object. Rather, again and again, various different objects may be arising, but again and again, you are able to establish mindfulness and try to investigate, and you are maintaining necessary amount of energy. And when you are successful, there is a kind of a pleasant feeling, happiness arising, and you are now feeling calm, tranquil, and that environment produces the concentration. So here actually may be an instantaneous concentration. Instantaneously, again and again to this incoming phenomena, again and again you are concentrating the mind, focusing the mind, and you are applying the mind. So the concentration enlightenment factor also going to develop. Assume now everything is successful. Each and every phenomena appears and you don't need to struggle for that. And you are quite mindful, unbroken mindfulness is there. You are able to investigate, and only the necessary amount of energy is developed, maintained. So you are well balanced, and you have a kind of pleasant feeling. Things are happening smoothly, and tranquility, bodily tranquility and mind tranquility is also there, mentally also tranquil, and the mind is well focused. So on this situation, everything is successful. You have nothing to do. On such situation, therefore, it's a matter of being equanimous through the situation. You don't need to do any kind of an adjustment because everything is now in order. So you can simply observe the process. You can let it happen because now the mind has taken it over. So you can simply rest. You can simply allow the mind to continue in this process. Again and again, various new phenomena arising. Again and again, being applied to that phenomena. Now the mind is examining. Now the mind is investigating. It happens naturally. It happens smoothly. So you can simply observe. You can simply be at the back seat and allow the process to go, carry on. So this is how, where you have nothing to do. So this equanimous approach is where the equanimity enlightenment factor going to develop. So he is closely examining the process, but nothing to do. No adjustments are needed. So he is simply equanimous. Now Buddha explains like this, all seven enlightenment factors, how it being developed in Kayanupassana. So you can explain the same way when you are doing, say for example, element characteristics. When you are observing Dhatu Manasikara, when you do Dhatu Manasikara meditation, element characteristics. So there are each and every element characteristics can be observed like this. Say you have some amount of concentration already developed. Now at many places of the body, there are various sensations arising. So you are able to recognize them. You are locating your attention to each and every phenomena. There the mindfulness is established. Sati Sambojjhanga start to develop. And you start to investigate it. Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga start to develop. And you are maintaining energy. Virya Sambojjhanga is there. And once you are successful, there is a kind of what you call Niramisa Piti, unworldly kind of happiness is there. So that leads to have tranquilized the body and the mind, tranquility and enlightenment factor. And when everything happens comfortably, so the mind concentrates further. And when everything is successful, you can maintain this process, simply allow it to happen, so the equanimity and enlightenment factor is there. Assume that you are doing Vedana Anupassana. So similar approach can be taken. Say various feelings are rising. Assume it may be a pleasurable feeling. If it is a pleasurable feeling, sometimes what happen is we being absorbed to it. We start to attach to it. But on the other hand, if there is a painful feeling, we start to repel from it. But when one has the proper balance, so we are neither being attracted, nor repelled. So we are able to maintain that balance. So in the Vedana Anupassana, So therefore, maintaining this balance is some sort of a practice, some sort of a training, where you are not being attracted towards the pleasurable feelings, nor you are being repelled by the painful feelings. And again, you are not ignorant in the equanimous feelings. You are also very aware of these equanimous feelings. Now, this is how the mindfulness has established. So when you have this balance, when there are so many various types of feelings available, again and again you are able to recognize them. You are not ignoring them, you are able to fully recognize them. So this is where the mindfulness enlightenment factor has started. So you are not doing just for one feeling, but you are continuing it for many feelings, and the enlightenment factor start to develop because of this. Now you are not just keeping your attention there, but now you start to investigate what's really happening in this feeling. Is it a single feeling? Or is it a combination of so many feelings? So how these many feelings are behaving? Are they arising together? Are they arising at many different times? Or how they disappear? Are they lasting for a long time? Is it a single feeling or a collection of feelings? So likewise, you start to investigate. So this investigation helps to develop that investigation enlightenment factor, Dhamma Vichaya. Similarly, you have to maintain effort, especially in the, say for example, in the Vedana Anupassana, if you are dealing with the painful feeling, so fair amount of energy has to be developed. Fair amount of energy has to be maintained, because mind might say, I can't do it, it's difficult, it's so painful. So likewise, mind might complain. Even on such occasion, if you have to encourage your practice, so there are the energy enlightenment factor is required. Similarly, say you are continuing your practice, and say once things are happening smoothly, you are calmed down, tranquility enlightenment factor is there, rupture enlightenment factor is there, and your mind is well focused, well concentrated on each and every phenomena. So the concentration enlightenment factor is there, and if everything happens smoothly, you can just observe without doing anything. So the equanimity enlightenment factor is there. So this is how the enlightenment factor being developed in the Vedana Anupassana. Suppose you are doing Chitta Anupassana. So various defiled states even can be recognized. Now that is the beauty in the practice. So the defilements or the defiled state of mind no more become a devil to the practitioner, rather he know how to use it for his own advantage, how to use it for his own development. So typically what happens is when we have weak mindfulness, we've been driven by the defilement. But once you are able to come out of the defilement, once you are able to establish mindfulness, so you know defilement as a defilement. You know kilesa as a kilesa. When there is lustful mind, you are able to establish mindfulness, and there you know, okay, this is a lustful mind. When there is a, say, resistance in the mind, you know, okay, this is a resistance in the mind. When there is some sort of a distraction in the mind, scattered mind, so you know there's a scattered mind. When the mind is well focused, you know now the mind is well focused, concentrated. Assume that you are doing some samatha meditation even, and if the mind is absorbed, rather than simply being or trapped in that absorption, you can even come out of that, and you know now there is a absorbed mind, now there is a fairly concentrated mind, highly concentrated mind. So that also can be known. So this is where we can see all these mental states objectively, rather than driven by these mental states, rather than being a victim of these mental states. So we have the capacity to look at them objectively. So we can come out of the situation and simply looking at them like a third person, like a second person, like an outsider, So on such situation, so the mindfulness is established and the sati sambojjhanga begin to develop. And not only that, so the clear recognition, what type of defilement is it? Is it lust? Is it anger? Is it sloth and torpor? Is it say restlessness? Is it kind of a regret? Is it kind of a doubt? Is it jealousy? So likewise, you can know the tone, you can know the somewhat even the causes, how it is happening. So this is how we are investigating. We are going to the root, we are going to the sources, causes, and this is how the investigation happens. Investigation enlightenment factor develops. Now sometimes when many defilements are happening again and again, you are maybe practicing for a long time, but still defilements are happening. So it might generate some kind of a discouragement. But again and again, you are encouraging yourself. So this is the only way, this is the correct practice. Let's continue this. So likewise, you are energizing. So this is the energy enlightenment factor developing. And things are happening smoothly, then the piti, rapture, is there, tranquility is there, and you are able to distinctly recognize all these things, and each and every mental state you can distinctly recognize. So therefore the clear comprehension, investigation is there, and the concentration is there. If things are happening smoothly, and then nothing to do, rather allow things to happen, equanimity, enlightenment factor is there. So likewise, all these four foundations of mindfulness develops the seven enlightenment factors. Now, when it comes to enlightenment factors, so as I mentioned, Buddha says, it is not expected to allow them to fade away, rather it's the opposite, that we try to maintain, we try to improve them. Say for example, when there is dhamma vichaya, santangva ajjattang dhamma vichaya sambojjhangam attime ajjattang dhamma vichaya sambojjhangoti pajanati. As an example, when there is investigation enlightenment factor available in the mind, so if one establish mindfulness, so he know, okay, now the mind is examining. Now the mind investigates the phenomena. So you have that feeling, you have that kind of a vantage point where you can observe this whole scenario. So he know, since the mind is now examining, he know now the Dhamma Vichaya is operating. Investigation is in full condition, now things are happening smoothly. And if there is no Dhamma Vichaya, there is no examination, there is no investigation, mind simply stay on the surface, no examination, no penetration. So that also can be known. When asantang va ajjattang dhamma vichaya sambojjhangang nattime ajjattang dhamma vichaya sambojjhangoti pajanati. When there is no dhamma vichaya, there is no investigation, the yogi can know there is no dhamma vichaya sambojjhanga. Now assume, now you are arousing dhamma vichaya, now you start to examine, you start to investigate, now that dhamma vichaya start to develop. Now you know, okay, now again mind has started examination, mind has started investigation. So the Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga is now in operation. That also can be known. Now, because of this process, when the Dhamma Vichaya is improving, you know the mind is now fully engaged in the process. Again and again, onto various phenomena, the mind become established, mindfulness become established, and the investigation happens smoothly, so the development of the enlightenment factors are happening. Now here Dhamma Vichaya is happening. So likewise, during this process, so the yogi is in a full awareness of this whole operation. So everything it's like a factory. For example, it's like a line where everything is happening, various workers are there, they are attending to each and every piece. The line is going on, the production line is happening in a smooth pattern. Smoothly. So you are like a supervisor, you can observe this whole process. So likewise, when the investigation happens, so you can simply rest if it is happening smoothly. So likewise, this enlightenment factors can be explained. So I like to take another session on this enlightenment factors. For today, I like to conclude from this point, and now I open the session for questions.
There was a really quick question, Bhante. Could you please say the Pali words for tranquility and equanimity?
Yeah, for tranquility it is said passaddhi, and the equanimity it is upekkha. Yes, yes, I can hear you.
My question is about observing these things and doing the investigation during the meditation time and then doing it in the day-to-day life. So when I'm doing the meditation, I can see if there is a hindrance. I can see if it is if the mind is without hindrance, and I can see if it is agitated or if it is calm, everything like that. And I, after a very short period, it becomes very calm. So at the start, it might be mind might be going here, there, everywhere. But mostly, even if it goes anywhere, it is not to anything substantial. So I don't see very many hindrances there. But at least I'm aware that the mind is going to just ordinary things that are happening daily. But when it is in my daily life and when something happens, sometimes it happens very quickly and I don't recognize it that quickly unless I'm happening to observe a conversation of some other people and I feel something. I don't know if you know what I'm saying exactly. So if there is a meeting or something and there is a conversation going on and somebody says something, and I'm just observing it, I might be able to observe that, yeah, this one is not a pleasant thing this person is saying, and I can see in my mind that I'm agitated by the way this person is talking. But if the person is talking with me and I'm talking, it is difficult for me to catch this. So what is your advice for daily life, the same thing of observing these hindrances, if you are actively involved? Is it because my mindfulness is not strong enough that I'm already engaged in a discussion or talking, while in the other case I can because I'm not participating in the conversation but listening to somebody?
Yeah, I think I agree. As you quite correctly mentioned, so when we ourselves are involved in the discussion, we are actively participating. So we are actively participating and we are so much a part of the whole conversation, so we lose the balance in a way. So that is why, say, in the mindfulness practice, it is neither we absorb to the process, neither we repelled or completely ignorant about the process. So are very much in the middle. So we know there is something happens and we have some idea about it. At the same time, we are doing it. And we are not even ignorant about it. Say, for example, now I am talking to you. So if I am talking to you completely absorbed in the discussion, then I may not know, okay, I am in Sri Lanka, I am in front of a laptop, I am conducting this discussion. So I lose that the typical other parameters. I am fully in the discussion. So I am fully in the inside, absorbed to the discussion. So that is one extreme. On the other hand, if I am ignorant, then I am simply talking without giving the proper answer because I am not established mindfulness. So that is the other extreme. So the middle is, so I know I am answering a question, I know the proper parameters. Okay, now I am on a chair in front of a laptop, I am talking to a person, so that information is also available at the same time. So that is the mindfulness, that level, and at the same time I am answering the question. So this way, if there is a defilement arising in the mind, there's a higher chance that I am able to trace it. Because I am not fully on the extremes, but rather in the middle. So I have some awareness about on my own self, about my sort of self-awareness is available. So that helps me to recognize the state of the mind. Now, as I mentioned, if you are in a kind of an extreme, then you don't have that capacity. So you may go through various defilements and you are driven by them. You are not able to trace them. So by the way, I feel that as you develop mindfulness, so what I am explaining is possible to happen. We can't say forcefully make it. Rather, as we develop mindfulness, we get this balance. So we need to find this balance. Like, say, for example, when a river is flowing, so if we are on the gland, so we can simply watch it. We don't need to jump to the water and struggle with it. Or we don't need to even look out other side or not watching it. Rather, we watch the river flowing, but we are not getting wet because of the river. Something like that.
Yes, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'd like to invite
Chicha
to please ask the next question.
Yes, thank you. Now, Bhante, I just wanted to ask you about, if it's okay, about my meditation in relation to what we have been learning.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's just that more recently, I find that I get very light very quickly, and I go into a sukha and a pasadi level with preeti coming in between. And after it subsides a little bit, I do this investigation of that's vipassana, isn't it? When you are saying investigation, it means vipassana. Is that right, Bhante?
Yeah, we can say so. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So I observe the rising and passing away and that sense of the nibbana and whatever comes, pleasant, unpleasant, well, not many unpleasant, it's mostly pleasant feelings. I just observe whatever comes my way, but then after listening to what you were saying, I feel now there comes a time when I have to just observe. Would that be right if you say that, just to observe what is happening?
Correct.
Because I feel that when I just do nothing, I like go as if I'm going into a deep samadhi and like a alokya kind of thing. So I wasn't sure whether I should allow that to happen or what. So that is one of my questions, Bhante.
Yeah, so basically if I answer you now, so it, as you can see, the investigation is a must, observation is a must, but the because of this investigation, assume now whatever the phenomena starts to fade away, they become like blurred, everything become like a flux. So on such situation, we have to allow it to happen. We should not forcefully start to observe other phenomena, rather we have to allow that to fade away. So once that fading away happens, so you have nothing to do. You can simply be in the middle and simply watch everything appear like energy, everything appear like flux. Now you simply have to develop equanimity. Equanimity is the sort of enlightenment factor at this level become fairly prominent. So you simply have to maintain it. And in case, assume that you go to sleep, because now this is a very subtle stage and you have nothing to do. So mind sometimes can become lethargic, become lazy and ultimately become drowsy and can even sleep. Now on such situation, you should avoid that either. So you have to maintain
yes.
the kind of a balance. Equanimity should be there, but still not going to the other extreme of falling asleep. Rather, you are awakened. Awakened but doing nothing.
And there is also a very, 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 very comfortable feeling of the whole body.
Right. Yeah. So let it feel,
so
no problem.
Then that is also a kind of attachment, isn't it, Bhante? Because it's a very, very pleasant, very peaceful. So can that be also a kind of upadana?
Yeah, it can be an upadana, but knowing that is not an upadana. No, that knowing that there's a pleasurable feeling, knowing that there's a peaceful feeling, is where you know exactly, okay, there is a pleasurable feeling, there is a pleasant feeling. But you can abide by that without attaching to it.
Right. It's
because
difficult sometimes,
you know, maybe. Because
not at the time of meditation, but later on, when you think about it, it should, so possibly upadana can develop.
It is possible, at the same time, if you are aware of the upadana, you can avoid it. Say, for example, if I give you an example, say, you can see a flame, and you know the flame is burning. And if you know that, then it may be attractive. It's very beautiful, shiny, glimmer is there, but you are not going after it because you know it is burning.
Yes.
So like that. But you can make use of its, the light, the illumination can be used. So similarly, there may be kind of available comfort, available peacefulness. So you can dwell there, but without making an attachment to it. So rather than telling, okay, I am the one having this, or making some sort of a conceit, not being attached to or attracted to it. But rather, you know, there is a tranquility, there is a pleasant abiding. So that's it.
And also, I can I can sit for a. I mean, I don't have the time. Of course, I have to wake up. I have to get up. But I can sit there for hours if I wanted to. If I had the opportunity. But unfortunately, I have to get up because obviously we are lay people and we have to get on with our lives. Sometimes I just don't want to get up, Bhante?
Yeah. So actually, at these levels, you need to somewhat encourage this equanimity. Because you went through a fair amount of investigation, observation, and it leads to kind of a detachment. Now you are able to maintain some sort of a tranquility. And everything become like a flux. Your mind is not attracted to any. Rather, you can maintain a well-balanced attitude. And again, the mind is free. There is nothing to hold. No upadana. So this, actually, you need to familiarize this state. So don't simply get up on such situation. Rather, try to familiarize the mind. Because we need to introduce that state to the mind. Okay, this is a kind of a fairly present and again, friction-free, no attachment, fairly spacious, peaceful state of mind. This is something that we can encourage, and there is no tension at all. And this has to be appreciated and well trained at this level.
So you have to go back again and try to maintain that level without having to get up and go.
Exactly. So that is what actually we discussed while in the six ayatana sense bases. So where Buddha explains in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang upekha. So this tranquility is fairly sublime. It is peaceful. So Buddha encourages us to stay there. There is no attachment. There is no hindrance. There is no upadana, clinging, but just abiding.
So really, the equanimity or upeka is not a neutral feeling, Bhante. It is a very different feeling.
Exactly.
Yes, it's not the neither pleasant nor unpleasant, because there is a certain amount of a very positive feeling.
Exactly. Yes, I agree with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Say, for example, if you consider the neutral feeling, now when we are observing a breath, so that also a neutral feeling. But
yes,
here it is not. I mean, it is more mature kind of a neutral feeling that you are having.
Exactly, Bhante.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The other question I just want to ask you, when we are observing the four elements, one has to really experience all those. I mean, we know that there is the earth element and all this kind of thing, but one has to experience it. Isn't that right? I mean, even in daily life, we can see the water element and the air element and everything else, the hardness and the softness and the smoothness and the roughness, all that. But when we are meditating, we have to actually experience that.
Yeah,
is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, every time it was there, so we are, in a way, we are paying attention to them, especially while in the meditation. But I mean, anyway, if you have time in daily activities also, you can pay attention to them, because
yes,
they are there.
Yes, I can pay.
Yeah.
But in the meditation, it's only the, actually for me, the air element, the heat element, and the earth element, we can experience, because not so much the water element. I mean, you can't really, it's there with those elements, but I can't. I mean, in the daily life, you can experience the body element, but not so much in meditation. Would that be right if I said that?
Yeah, could be. Because water element is somewhat subtle, and even in the books, it's mentioned that it's difficult to comprehend the water element. But the other three may be quite easy to comprehend. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Bhante. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Therwan Sarnai.
Therwan Sarnai, Bhante.
Okay. Okay, so the question is, when we notice defilements arising in the mind, do we simply note and let go, or do we also investigate how and why it arose, examine causality?
Yeah, both are correct. Actually, it depends on the mood sometimes. So, for example, you are in a fairly good mood and the mindfulness is well established, you do very refined investigation, then you can, of course, look at the causes. So that is why, I mean, different approaches are there, not a single approach. And you can look at the causes. You can look at how this whole process has happened as a kind of a causality. This causes this causes this. Likewise, you can even watch back and see how it has happened as a cause and effect relationship. So this actually encourages more investigation and develops a fair amount of wisdom. And on the other hand, there may be other situations that if you do too much investigation, your mind starts to become restless. On such situation, you can simply maintain very bare kind of investigation, and you simply know, okay, this is a defilement, and you simply just watch it without much investigation, and it will you allow it to fade away. So you're simply being dispassionate about it. So many different approaches are there. So depending on the situation, you can use whatever useful.
Thank you, Bhante. And the next question is, sometimes due to karma, our body and mind may be weak and energy is not adequate and mind may be drowsy or investigation is not clear. What should we do? I find that resting doesn't necessarily help with this energy.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I mean, in order to do a fair amount of investigation, you need to have even some bodily energy. That is why in certain other suttas, Buddha mentioned the two categories of energy, that is the bodily energy and the mental energy. So sometimes we don't have enough bodily energy if we are in a kind of ailment. On such situation, actually, we simply can't continue as we did while in a typical healthy situation. So one option is that we can avoid making the mind sick because of the bodily sickness. So that is where Buddha given example, given advice to when Anatha Pindika, because this our bodies are subjected to various ailments, and we become aged, and we become weak. And how about keeping the mind intact without allowing the mind to get sick? So this is something that we can take care of. So we can't expect that we are able to maintain this complete, say, full-fledged energy throughout our lives. So it can vary. So that is why in another way I can say you that if you are able to develop a fair amount of these enlightenment factors when you are in a healthy situation, so that developed level can be maintained at least to some extent when you are sick. Because you can't improve, maybe, because the bodily assistance, support is not coming. But on the other hand, if you can maintain at least without allowing it to downfall, then that is at least much better.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. And the next question I'd like to invite Kanti. May I move?
Thank you. Bhante, my name is not Kanti, I'm Kanti's husband, Sam.
Right.
I hope it's okay if I ask a question.
Yes, yes, sure.
Yeah. It's not really a question, it's a clarification that I need on the bhujangas. Like if you take sati, dhamma vijaya, virya, piti, pasadi, samadhi and upekka, it seems to me that five of them you have to make an effort. But two of them, like piti and pasadi, they seem like results of what you have done, like experiences. Am I correct in that interpretation?
Yeah, actually I can even add even equanimity, like a result.
Correct.
Yeah, even equanimity
correct.
Can be added to that group, like a result.
Right.
Because you can't actually generate them, rather you simply make the conducive environment, then the enlightenment factor starts to develop. So I can
right.
certainly agree with you, and therefore actually Buddha divides these enlightenment factors into three groups. Actually, I thought of discussing this on the next week. So there is a group which is more active, and there's another group which is more biased towards the tranquility. So this tranquility biased enlightenment factors, we have nothing much to do, and once we are maintaining that sort of an atmosphere in the mind, then they start to develop. But the energetic type of enlightenment factors, we certainly have to somewhat involve and do something, and then only they start to develop.
Okay,
I'd like to invite Mandana to please ask the next question.
Thank you. Bhante, I had actually two questions, but one you already answered. So I'll only ask the other question. Now, when we start, let's say, Kayanupassana and go through all those different practices, like starting with the body, and then death contemplation, parts of the body and breath meditation and all that, and you come to a point when you know that you have mindfulness and you become fairly concentrated, and then as you said, let's say you experience, you can start seeing your mind, or you can become very sharply, you can become aware of your mind, and then you talked about the hindrances, so you can see that your mind is free of hindrances for very brief periods of time, and then you can see, let's say, one thought arises, and then you can also see that you can see that it's arising, or it has arisen, not arising, but you suddenly notice, okay, there is a thought, and then you watch it, and then you see that disappearing, and then likewise you start kind of watching your mind closely. So at that point, my question is, Bhante, you kept saying that, I think you cited or you quoted from Satipatthana Sutta itself, you kept saying that you become aware of that your mind state, you know, those in, seven enlightenment factors are present in your mind or not present in your mind, right?
Yes, yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so my question is something that I encounter every day in my practice is that I know that I have mindfulness, that I have the enlightenment factor of mindfulness because I can see the hindrances are not there at some time.
Yeah.
And then I also can suddenly see a hindrance as a result.
Yes.
So I know that I have mindfulness factor. And then I also know almost like by inference I know.
Yes.
Not by examining maybe, but by inference I know I also have to be there because if I don't have the lead yet,
yeah,
I will not be having mindfulness.
Correct, correct.
Right. So I'm just, sometimes I have, when you try to question yourself or you need to try to examine whether I have piti or sukha or whether I have even the investigation of Dhamma Vichaya, because if I don't have Dhamma Vichaya, then I will not be seeing those thoughts arising, or after the soon after the thought arises, and also I will not be seeing the mind free of hindrances if I don't have the Dhamma Vichaya, right?
Correct, yes.
Right, so these three factors, the first three factors that I talked about, the mindfulness, the virya, and the Dhamma Vichaya, all three, I feel that they are present for the most part of my Dhamma Anupassana practice. But one thing that I'm struggling with is that the moment I start questioning, or the moment I start becoming, wanting to become aware of piti, pasaddi, or equanimity, it's almost as if I lose my mindfulness and I get distracted to examining something else other than whether the hindrances are present or not. Bhante, do you have any advice for that kind of a situation?
Yeah, I think because now there is a beautiful saying comes in the Dhamma. It's called Nyatancha Nyanancha Ubhopi Vipassati. So there is something kind of a phenomena that can be observed, and that is the typical situation. And now we can say, okay, there is a phenomena that being observed by a mind, and that particular mind also can be observed. So you can say that we are going for another step. So not only the phenomena, not only the object, even the knowing mind also can be observed. So it is something like you are stepping back another step and you take another picture, big picture of the whole situation. You can see, okay, mind is in a proper situation, mind is smoothly observing things, and now you have a different vantage point, different observation point, and even that is more kind of an overlooking of the whole situation. That is also possible. But only thing is, this situation, we should not introduce a self into the picture, thinking that how it is happening to me? Am I having tranquility? Am I having investigation factor? So this is unknowingly we are putting a kind of a self view into the picture. So that is wrong, by the way. So that can lead to that can invite an unnecessary defilement to the picture. That is the self-view. That is the what we call as the, say, asmimana. That is kind of I into the picture. Rather, when things are happening smoothly, I mean, it is happening. So there is no place for I. There is no place for a person, but the things are happening smoothly, naturally. That is there. But the very moment we unnecessarily sometimes want to observe, okay, do I have something? I mean, am I doing it properly? So when we do that excessively, sometimes we are introducing this I into the picture unnecessarily. So hope you understood my point.
Yes, yes, yes. So that is why I am trying to understand how important is it.
Yeah.
For us to know whether these which factor is present at any given moment.
Basically, one easy understanding is that, as Buddha mentioned, so when five hindrances are absent, that definitely is an indication that enlightenment factors are present. They are, because completely opposite to each other. So when the hindrances are available, enlightenment factors are not available. When the enlightenment factors are available, the hindrances are not available. So basically, on the other hand, we can say like this. Now, assume that the nivaranas are available. So at that time, so you establish mindfulness. So then you are not driven by the defilement. You are not driven by the hindrance. So there the establishment of mindfulness happens. Now you start to investigate. Now it's a kind of a battle between the hindrance as well as the enlightenment factors. Now assume that the enlightenment factors win, then the defilements, hindrances start to fade away. Now they are the governing factor. So assume that at a given moment that you completely loses the mindfulness. So again, the hindrances are there. So you have become a victim of the hindrances, driven by the hindrances. So now we lost the battle. So therefore, mindfulness is the one, Buddha says, that always has to be present, showing us where we are. So it's a mindfulness is, as I mentioned, is always in the kind of a middle level. So it is not going to the extreme. Rather, it always shows us, am I driven by a defilement? So I am using the term I am, just for the clear, easy understanding, easy communication. So basically, mindfulness is the single enlightenment factor, Buddha says, necessary always, at all occasions. But the other two groups, like the active enlightenment factors and the inactive tranquility bias enlightenment factors, that we need to balance properly. So the mindfulness enlightenment factor is the one giving us the correct picture, proper perspective of the situation of the mind. So that also has to happen in a very delicate manner, balanced manner, rather than losing the balance of the mind.
Right. Thank you, Bhante.
So actually, it is quite interesting. So actually, when we are doing it, we sometimes lose this balance. We sometimes get trapped. We overdo sometimes. And we again introduce an I to the picture. Again, we become agitated. So am I doing it correct or am I doing it wrong? So again, the mind becomes agitated. So now we go wrong. Now we need to correct ourselves. So you can see it's entirely a practical approach. So Buddha has given the path. Buddha has shown the path. So these are the proper things. This is the way you got to do. But we ourselves have to practice. We ourselves have to lead the path. Then only we know these pitfalls. Yeah.
I have experienced that situation also.
Yeah.
Like sometimes instead of being energized after meditation, you sometimes feel tired also.
Yes, yes.
Because you have been trying too hard, and when you get up from the cushion, you feel not very energetic.
Correct.
You feel almost like exhausted and tired.
Exhausted. Yeah, it can happen, definitely. Actually, it happened, say for example, just to give you one example, my situation. So sometimes when I started practicing, I was too energetic. Several years ago, for example. So too energetic and trying so hard, and ultimately I become, even can't sleep. so enthusiastic, too much energy. So that is how we get into trouble. We do a lot of mistakes, and through our own mistakes we learn actually.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
That's very helpful.
Thank you,
Bhante. May we take one more written question?
Yeah, can.
So now we have practiced to some extent. Could you please guide us, taking the example of sudden death of a young good person from an accident, and the whole community saddened about it? This had happened a week or two ago. How we have to work out the scenario using our practice, and how can we help weeping people?
Yeah, sure. So basically, these are the situations which is unavoidable. So things happen we have no control at all. And we do our best, but at the same time, we need to know that the life is in a kind of a complete transient nature. It's quite impermanent. We have extremely less control. And there are various other factors affecting our life, like karma and various other mistakes, certain accidents, etc. So due to that, this death is unavoidable. So when it comes to the death, Buddha mentioned, we don't know when we are going to die. We don't know when, where we are going to die. And we don't know how we are going to die. And we don't know what is the disease and etc. which is causing us to die. So likewise, death is unavoidable. So more we sort of understand this transient nature of our lives, impermanent, uncertain nature of our lives, so we sometimes we can say get encouraged to practice the Dhamma, we get urged to practice the Dhamma, etc. But on the other hand, when death happens to another person, so we also feel that loss. Other people also start to feel that loss, and some even weep, right? So, but on the other hand, is this crying, is this weeping help the other person? It does not. So our weeping or our crying does not help the other person. So it in a way sort of make us also exhausted and make us also somewhat develop unnecessary defilements because we are now rejecting this reality. Now we know very well now this person has died, he's a good person. But we are not ready to accept it. It's very hard and bitter truth in a way. So are we ready to accept this bitter truth? So this life is completely impermanent. Even though we have health insurance, even though we have all the high-tech medical instruments, even though we have everything, still the death happens. So are we ready to accept this bitter truth? So therefore it's a kind of a radical acceptance we need to develop. So we need to honestly, humbly accept, even though we are in a 21st century, we are helpless in a way. So if we expect kind of a permanence, if we expect some sort of a certainty from our lives, so it is impossible to provide such, because there is no such guarantee. That's why, I mean, if I refer a sutta here, so in the Baddhekaratta Sutta mentioned, Ajjeva kichang atappang ko janya maranang suve. Nahino sangarantena mahasenena machuna. So Buddha mentioned, so you put forth effort today itself. How you know that death may not happen on tomorrow? And there is no agreement between the Mara and his retinue when he is coming and inviting you. So it can happen to you, it can happen to another person. And this is not the first time that we may have encountered this kind of a sudden passing away of a loved one. That maybe there are millions of times it has happened in the long samsara. So this is the nature. So this is the impermanent nature of this samsara. So we need to accept this. And more we accept it, more we sort of radically feel this reality, then we can recover. Rather than rejecting it, rather than resisting it, once we accept this is the bitter reality, this is the bitter truth, then we can sort of recover quickly than rejecting it. So this is where the resilience comes to the picture. So for a person who is into the practice, can return back to the normalcy of the life before another person who is not into the practice. Because resilience is developed through mindfulness, and we are able to come back to this typical normal lifestyle quickly than another person who is not into the practice. So therefore it's a good opportunity in a way for us to return back to how quickly we can return back to the normalcy of life. It is not that we are being somewhat rigid or not grateful, or we are sort of say cold-hearted or something like that. Rather, we feel it. Of course we feel it, but that's the nature. That is the bitter truth of this whole samsara. And so we got to accept it. And by accepting it, and if possible, we do some meritorious deeds and pass the merits to this passed away child or whoever. And that's the only thing we can do. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. Looks like we have one more raised hand. Can we take the question?
Okay.
Indira, you may unmute.
Sorry, Bhante.
Yeah.
Now, when we are just like in a conversation or day-to-day things, you realize that you have this hindrance, like say, I have a guilt inside me. So when I realize it and I let that go, I feel relaxed and like some lightness. Is that the deity or super or something, or what is it like? I mean, because I feel that I was attached to that. I was feeling guilty.
Yeah, actually, so basically these enlightenment factors have different, I mean, the ratios of different intensities, we can say. So, say for example, when you are going through some successful practice at the beginning, you may have a lot of piti, a lot of rapture. But when it happens again and again, you know how to balance, how to handle it. Then again and again it happens. Now that rapture is no more, but rather kind of a peacefulness going to be available in the mind. So kind of a mature peacefulness than that kind of a beginner's rupture. So therefore it is no harm, because it is not expected to have everything in its full-blown level. Rather, there's a more towards the equanimity, more towards tranquility, that the yogi may be sort of going towards. But at the very early stages, there may be a lot of rupture, and the investigation is there.
So Bhante, means without the deep concentration, can balance the other Pujanga Dhamma, right?
Yes, exactly. 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 Actually, when it comes to the enlightenment factors, there are two levels of development. So I'll take the... Actually, today I simply given you an introduction, the very early level of development, early stages of development, and Buddha mentioned another level of development. Once you are reaching to some extent, some successful level of the vipassana. So that we'll discuss on next week. So there are actually, we need to take a kind of a passive kind of an observation rather than too much active observation, active investigation. And that actually helps the development of enlightenment factors more in a dispassionate manner. Not much with the involvement, but kind of uninvolved manner. Third one, Sannai. Okay, then we'll wind up the session. So we have taken the session for 1.5 hours, and we discussed suttas as well as we discussed certain other Dhamma points. With this, we were able to accumulate a lot of merits. Let's share these merits with all the passed away relatives, all the others who are in need of merits, and let's wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition, Nibbana. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam. Idaṃ vo ñāti naṃ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Idaṃ vo ñāti naṃ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Idaṃ vo ñāti naṃ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.